Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and it brings me great pleasure to say back by popular demand after creating a little human, my co-host, Jessica Baker. Welcome back, my friend.
I want to know what this popular demand is and who is the one person who asked for me back.
It was me.
Yeah, so wild. Since I was last here, I pushed a human out of my body and proceeded to keep it alive for 5 weeks now.
For five weeks.
Wild.
Little
what a
Veda.
Time. Little Veda little Rose.
Yeah. Bless her heart.
She's a spunk.
She's a delightful. I am in love.
Yeah, good. So am I. So that works well.
Oh, it's so delightful to have you back. And on a very momentous occasion, this is, in fact, the 100th episode of the Big Three podcast.
Wild.
If I had a party popper, I'd let it off now. But I did not prepare. I did not prepare. I did not prepare.
We've been doing this for a long time.
It's been a hot minute.
100's a doozy. That's it's significant.
It is.
Yeah, wild.
It's an anniversary.
If you guys want something different, don't let us know. It will crush us.
No, it will. But I felt on such an occasion such as this, that we should just take a little momentary walk down memory lane. Favorite moments on the Big Three, you know, just those really significant, like, ooh, that just encapsulates our experience on the Big Three.
Yeah, I could say the most spiritual awakening moments, the most philosophical biblical discussion.
We could say
I'm
that.
Not going to.
You're not going to.
I don't remember any of those.
That's why they're recorded, so that we can listen back.
Look, most of the things I would say, Mark actually screened out. you guys think we just do the I get cut all the time?
Censorship on the Big Three,
which I'm sure most of the congregation appreciate. Some would probably like to hear what I have to say. Yeah, it's just been all around good time. We've kind of gotten into our stride a little bit, which
we have.
I need to.
Yeah. Listen, the banter is strong.
The banter is strong.
We did have the Carole Baskin theme song highlight for me.
I think that was Jessie Baker.
Jessie Baker.
Yeah, I can't remember any of the other
no,
words.
Neither can I.
Episode 6 or something.
it was a while ago. Yeah. It was a while ago. There was the moment where I declared my love for you. Just, you know, one of those accidentally Freudian slips. Yep. It just came out. I just said, I love you. That was a vibe.
That was a vibe.
It was awkward in the room after that. You could feel the tension. And then I think if I can say a third, and we're Baptist and everything's a 3.7, I remember once a blooper made its way into the podcast and I think I fumbled a word and then just went like phlegm. and I can confirm that night when it was released, I probably got a dozen text messages from people saying hashtag phlegm.
Well, that's good to know people listen.
It is, isn't it? I was like, you are the ones.
I'm
our dedicated listeners.
Yeah. People who come up to me ask me about Huxley, I'm like, oh, you listen to the podcast.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice to know you guys pay attention to the random just stuff that we say.
Yeah, look, and I like that Mark's here to ground us, bring us back.
He is.
But he's not here right
he's
now,
not,
so
no.
Whatever. We can just do whatever.
I think Roxy's going to join us at the level that we normally exist at. It's going to be great.
I hope so.
But Ken, you know, I'm just going to put it out there for all those of you listening, jump on our socials. Mm. I'd love to hear your favourite moments from the Big Three over the 100
Love
episodes.
That.
Love that. Come on, guys, tell us your stories. Tell us those moments. It's going
to
be good.
Did you also love when Matt declared his love to me?
Or our theme songs. Actually, there's a lot of moments where we just busted out into song.
Yeah.
Or was that just me?
I think I did it a couple of times, but didn't quite get the feedback that you did about phlegm.
Didn't quite hear those
Please
pitches.
Don't ever do that again.
Hit those notes. Oh, well, for those of you who missed it, our associate pastor, Roxanne Lawler, preached this weekend during our Sunday services, continuing our series, The Kingdom of Heaven is Like. And here we are focusing on the parables of Jesus found in Matthew chapter 13 and what they reveal of God's kingdom. Rock spoke of the parable of the wheat and the weeds and whose role it really is to remove the weeds from the harvest. Now you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. And so today in the Big Three, as we always do, we're going to keep that conversation going from Sunday's message. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Roxy, and Jess and I will be putting the Big Three questions to her as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But Jess, to get us started, share your feedback. What are your thoughts?
I just think such wisdom from Rox in the check yourself before you wreck yourself.
It's a classic.
I need that tattooed on my arm.
Should be a proverb. Needs to be biblical.
Very good. Yeah, definitely. I think it is actually in the Psalms somewhere. Mark's not here to confirm. So
just paraphrased.
We'll go with that. No, but I thought she was right. It was a meaty parable. I'm definitely one of the people in the crowd who are like, what? Or the disciples have just totally goes over their head. So it's always nice to have things explained to me. but I really loved that we're the wheat. Mm. We're not the servants who are clearing out the weeds. We just need to focus on growing and on our relationship with God. We're not here to cull other people.
And she spoke about cancel culture.
We're
it's
not
true.
There for that.
We're not there for that. But she spoke about those really obviously significant times throughout history where the church has tried to weed.
Mm.
Hasn't worked out. Mm. Has not worked out.
Sorry about those women who were deemed as witches.
We apologize
for drowning you. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. Look, Christians, rough. We go astray.
We do our best.
99% of the time. But yeah, so that was good. What about you? What was your take home?
Yeah, listen, I think like Rox reaffirmed something, just kind of speaking about that big picture of what parables are. I loved that imagery of like, and Jesus obviously used this, like it's a feast. Like I'm giving you something meaty to chew on.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to sit at the table. You're going to be here a while. There are several courses. You're probably going to get indigestion. Like have some water while you go, like wash it down.
Yeah.
And it's this whole idea of, I guess, again, just allowing space to sit in the ambiguity and the complexity of parables, but inviting us into it. Like, come on, guys, let's explore this together. Let's unpack this together. And as a community of faith, let's learn just mm-hmm. even in a small way what it means to be a part of the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, very nice.
Loved it. Mm, what a vibe.
Delightful.
What a vibe. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Jess, can you please?
I can.
Tell
so
us what the big
back.
Three are.
Question one, how do we identify the weeds when they can look so much like the wheat? That good old Darnell.
That Darnell.
That pesky Darnell. For those who didn't listen to the sermon, you've got no idea what we're referring to, so go back and listen to that first. Question two, the invitation is to be the wheat, which bears fruit leading to life. What does that look like for today's Christians? Very nice.
Yeah.
Very applicable.
We want to be the wheat.
Mm-hmm.
How do we be the wheat?
Mm-hmm. How do we not be the Darnell?
Yeah, don't want to be the Darnell.
Poisonous. yeah, great. And question three, how do we live within the tension of being patient with God and being proactive for the gospel?
Yeah.
Classic.
Because obviously a big part of Rox's message was it's not our role to judge. It's not our role to pull out the weeds. Mm-hmm. But obviously, like, and I've got to admit, I had this thought, like, but obviously there's, we are called to kind of share the way, right? So how do we do that? Anyway, I'm not going to answer it. Rox is.
That's
Rox
right.
Is.
We've got no idea what's going on.
I am clueless. So I think there's only one thing missing, and that is Roxanne Lawler herself. Welcome to the Big Three, my friend.
Hello. Happy 100.
Yay.
Congratulations, guys. So exciting.
They haven't cancelled us yet.
No. Let's see how we go at 101. We'll see if we make it. No, great job. How good is that?
Yay. It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, that's seriously snaps for you both. Amazing.
Thanks.
Keep going. Keep going.
Thank you for bringing the celebratory chocolate.
I did bring some celebratory sugar, yes.
Firm.
Yeah, love that.
How are you going, Rox? What's news?
Oh, going good, going well, you know, just, you know, busy working, life,
keeping the
studying,
ship afloat.
Keeping the thing. Yeah, that's right. The canoe is paddling forwards and we are paddling like mad.
Appreciate you guys stepping up as senior pastor.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I like to call us pretend co-senior pastors.
Yeah. Love that title.
Because we're not
very
real.
Official.
We're not real. Yeah. No, it's not real. This is
How's
not real.
How's the stress levels? They're doing well?
Listen, I've had some pitchy moments.
Yeah,
like I've kind of gone up and up every now and then. Like, is this happening?
Rox seems a lot more calm.
No, I think I think it's going all right.
We're smashing goals.
The church hasn't caught fire. We're doing all right.
Yeah, we
put a whole set in the church.
Yes.
Like, come on, we've done some stuff.
We've preached sermons.
Absolutely.
Done things.
May Mission Month is going on.
Yes.
It's all happening.
Yes. Come on. Yeah. Cheers to us.
Yeah. Well done.
Well done for preaching the sermons and doing some things. That's what we're paid for.
You jest, but it's hard work.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt in my mind.
Speaking of hard work, Let's get into the big three.
So, Rox, in the parable, we're thinking the wheat and what that pesky little person, that's how I'm going to call him a person, did.
The evil one.
Yeah, spreading
the
weeds. Ooh, how rude is
the
that?
Enemy.
So rude. What did you call it? Like the agricultural...
Sabotage.
Terrorism?
Yeah. Eco-terrorism. Yeah.
And it
yeah.
is. It is. But that poor farmer, they've got the highest rates of suicide. Like, they're going through enough.
I know.
Anyway, that's not the point. The point is we think kind of he planted something that looked very similar to the wheat, right?
Yeah.
So how do we identify the weeds when they can look so much like the wheat?
Ooh.
Not talking specifically about plant life.
Like farming? No. More kind of metaphorical. Yeah, on that level. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think when I first read this parable and understood it, I could never get it because I'm like, well, you know, it's pretty obvious. Like weeds look different to, you know, like your rose bush in the garden. Like it's not... You know,
yeah, I've got a lot of weeds growing in my garden.
I can identify them pretty well. Whereas I think when I kind of read into it and like, oh my gosh, this is almost identical, right? It's almost identical to wheat, false wheat or darnel, which is possibly and probably the plant that Jesus is referring to because it was known at the time. So I think that really just changes the understanding of the parable so much.
Yeah.
And I think the key there is in what they lead to. You know, like the wheat is this life-giving, you know, actual useful, you know, for life
love
and food.
Love a carb.
Absolutely.
Love a carb.
Beautiful.
Give me some pasta, some bread.
A staple for life. You know, they didn't have a lot of choice. Yeah. You know, it's not like they could go for couscous, you know.
Also delicious.
Yeah.
Not a carb.
Yeah. Not a carb.
Yeah. Not pasta, let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. but the darnel or the weed leads to death. You know, it was toxic. And the Latin word to describe it is actually the same word that is for drunkenness. So in Latin. So it's something that sets you drunk, but not in a sort of positive, happy wine way, actually in a kind of death way.
Yeah.
So it's really unhelpful. So I guess that's a key for me to look at that is what are the things that I am doing that lead to life? You know, what are the things that I'm doing as a follower of Jesus and as someone who wants to be an image bearer of the King? What is it that I'm doing that is life-giving, life-affirming, that leads to life and, you know, adding nutrition, so to speak, if we're going to use that metaphor again, into people's worlds? You know, am I actually helping people to thrive and grow and flourish and be all that they can be? Or am I actually like bringing something that is death and destructive and poisonous and sends them off, you know, on a tangent? So I think it's the kind of your deeds will reveal what is going on underneath. I think that's kind of the key to identification of the difference between weeds and wheat. And I guess we look at that as individuals and we can judge ourselves as individuals. And I think that's a really good thing to do is to look at your own heart, your own life and have a moment where you just coming before God and going, God, is there stuff in my life that is actually toxic? You know, is there stuff in my life which is not what you want me to do, that is actually a poison, is actually affecting other people, and be repentant and say, God, can you just get rid of this, you know, my life? And that might mean doing some, you know, deep inner work, you know. It could mean, you know, professional assistance. It could mean, you know, just letting go of stuff that you've been hanging on to for a long time, and it's, you know, and it's kind of you've calcified around that in some respect, and you've just got to kind of chip it away and lay it before the Lord and go, like, I've got to let this go. This is just a little poison in my life. It's toxic. It just needs to be gone. So we can do that for ourselves. The difficulty is when we see it in other people and we see the result of
so easy to identify in others.
And you probably have had that moment where you're listening in sermons and you're like, oh, you know what? Such and such needs to hear this.
This person needs to hear this.
Yeah, exactly. And we do that. It's just our human nature. We go, oh, if only this person were here, they really need to hear this. And
so
I think,
savage.
Oh man, we all do it. But looking at ourselves first and then, you know, going to, you know, how do we identify that in others? And then how do we help them in a way that is actually godly and compassionate to bring about change in their life without judging or weeding, as the parable says. You know, like weeding is pretty final. You know, like if you pull out a weed in your garden, you know, you're not replanting it anywhere. You know, it's going straight in the green bin and the council take it to I don't know where. Somewhere.
Away.
They take it away. Exactly. So for us, if we're going to help other people and after we've identified our own stuff, you know, how do we help them in a way which helps them to replant the good and to destroy the weeds? How do we identify it? I think it's in the actions and the behaviours and the and the fruit of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's expressed in lots of ways. So
how, like, because one of the key things that you spoke about in your message, Rox, was the fact that obviously weed and this darnel, this weed, were so similar. So, like, I think when we think of weeds, we do think of the things in our life that really stand out. Yeah. But I guess this parable was talking about, and, you know, we know that the evil one is a deceiver. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a deception.
Yeah.
So how do we navigate the deception of that something might look like,
it's the wolves in sheep's clothing kind of thing.
And how do, like... So obviously one of the ways in which we can test things is this bringing life or is this, you know, toxic in some way? But I guess that seems like it's quite far down the track. Like we're at the point where it's bearing fruit in our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything that we can do kind of before that, like, you know, before the weeds take really deep root in our lives? Ooh, yes. I'm really throwing you under the bus here. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But this question's just coming out of me.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't stop. How do we identify in the deception of the weeds?
Yeah, and I think in the parable they don't. They don't identify. And if the weeds are actually darnel, which they think they are. They grow in the same soil conditions.
Yeah.
They have the same schedule. So they've got this upright stalk. It erupts out of the soil at the same time. The leaf structure is almost identical. And you can tell at a very, very close look. Yeah. But if you're just an untrained eye, you can't tell. It's very difficult to tell until the heads bear the grain, and wheat is this golden brown colour, and the head gets heavy and hangs down, and you know, see the classic pictures of fields, and they've sort of got that droopy, you know, head on the wheat, whereas darnel stays upright and it's got a black thing. And so I think the thing is in the parable that you can't tell. But I guess for the very trained eye you can. But I think that comes in proximity and scrutiny. So if you're a farmer and you're walking in your field and you looked at each individual plant each one and each leaf structure, you'd probably go, that's darnel, that's wheat. And you could pull it out. So I think there's a proximity aspect to this. Like the closer you get to other people, the more you can perceive the difference.
Or maybe if we're talking individually, like for ourselves, who are we allowing that close to look?
Who's
into our faith?
Yeah, who's cultivating, to use a gardening term?
Yeah,
us. Nice. You know, who are we doing? Who are we allowing into our wood? And who are being real with and transparent with and saying, you know what, I'm really struggling in this. You know, this is what I'm doing, and these are the results. And for someone to come along and going, actually, you know what, there's a bit of toxicity in there because these results aren't giving you things that are life affirming. Yeah. You know, they're actually giving you something that is poisonous and is actually causing, you know, the dizziness and blindness and all the bad stuff.
Yeah. That you actually can't see that this isn't fruitful. That you can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a really important there's a really important invitation in that because, I doubt that I'm alone in my experience of having those moments of kind of going, God, like, show me what is in my life that isn't of you, and then, like, coming up with, like, like, is this of you, is this not? And this real sense of uncertainty around like what is bearing fruit in my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, we talk about discipleship here at GBC, and we talk about that context of you and a few and those key people in your life that you give quite a privileged and personal position in your life where you are willing to be vulnerable and honest and raw with them to kind of give them the behind the curtains view of your life.
Yeah.
And I think that there's this space is where the power of that context really comes into shape.
Yeah, it does.
because it is a hard, it is a hard process to do by yourself.
Yeah, it is.
And like I said, it's these weeds are deceptive, and obviously they've been deceptive enough to take root in our lives. Yeah. So sometimes that trained eye, someone who really knows you, who has a maturity, mm-hmm. both spiritually and emotionally, who you trust. Can speak into your life, I think.
Yeah, they can tease apart the difference. So there's a psalm that David says. He says, "Search me, O God, and know me." You know, like look into my heart, see if there's any unclean or an unjust way in me, and lead me in the life everlasting. Mm. So it's actually a prayer, you know, that we can be praying as well.
Yeah,
that we can actually inviting God into it and saying, you know, search my heart, God. Yeah. You know, see if there's any unclean way in my heart. So it's that relationship with others, but also having that really frank conversation with God, which is actually quite terrifying, you know, like to ask the God of the universe to search your heart, you know, that's a bold move, right?
I know.
That's
a bravery move. We can hide things from
him. He sees it anyway, it's sort of almost.
Isn't that also a psalm? Where can I go from your presence?
Yes, it's like nowhere. Yeah, but go to the deep, you're there, you know. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I really do like that sense of proximity, but also knowing that there are times when we're not going to know and we are going to be fooled and that darnel will grow. But even in that, the farmer says, you know, if I pull up the darnel, you know, the root structure is going to be so entangled with the root structure of the weed that it's going to pull up both. Yeah. For the sake of this parable, the farmer is patient and says, okay, yeah, I know that this is difficult. I know that the world isn't as it should be. It's not shalom, peace, which is shalom is that Hebrew term of everything just as it should be. Everything is the way God designed, and that's therefore peaceful and life-giving. So it's not that, but I'm still not going to remove what's there entangling you lest it destroy you. Yeah. So there is an aspect where we can remove the darnel from ourselves. We can help those that trust us, that we trust to see their own, stuff and to help them. But ultimately it's that endurance, you know, like that we aren't going to, you know, we're not going to get every answer this side of the kingdom. You know, we're going to be waiting for the day that Jesus comes back and reveals it all.
And there's a real grace in that, isn't there? Because it can remove that drive for perfection that I think so many Christians struggle with. We think we've got to meet a certain threshold, a certain benchmark in order to be worthy. And this parable kind of speaks to the fact of, well, actually, like we're playing a long game here and there will be weeds, like you say. And I think that although that might be confronting and challenging for some people, I think that is a beautiful display of the grace of Jesus.
Yeah,
where he's like, I'm going to be patient with you. I'm not just going to go ripping things up and destroy everything and pull the rug out from underneath you. Yeah. I'm going to be patient. I understand that there are weeds and I'm still reaping a harvest as well in you.
Yeah, it's that power constrained, you know, that Jesus could, but he chooses not to. Mm. And that sustains our world. It's the same sort of power constraint that, you know, when he went to the cross, he says, don't you know, I could have my father send legions of angels, you know, but he chose to just undergo that suffering for the greater purpose. Mm. And that's kind of what we're doing too, is undergoing suffering and periods of trial and difficulties, knowing that in the end, God will set it to right.
Mm. That's good.
Craziness.
Well, let's go on to question two. So, Rox, you spoke about like our role in this parable. It's we're not the sower, we're not the workers, we're not the ones to reap the harvest. We are called to be the wheat. You know, the invitation is to be the wheat which bears fruit leading to life. So what does it look like for us to be wheat as Christians today? Like, I guess it's the flip side to question one. Mm. If, you know, what are the weeds? Well, like, what's the wheat? What's the fruit? What are the things that we should be on the lookout to kind of go, okay, like, I'm taking up the invitation and God is reaping a harvest in me.
This is a really big question because, like, you could just have a giant list of things. but
absolutely.
For what is it like to be a Christian that has a life which is leading to life? Mm. I think there's a couple of things I'd say about this. Firstly, this reminds me of the fruit of the spirit a lot. I'm massively connected to the fruit of the spirit at the moment. And I think I look at the global church and the things that Christians are kind of up in arms about in, you know, in different nations, the things that sort of take up a lot of airplay and a lot of oxygen. And they're things that aren't, that maybe are perceived to be things that are adding to life, but I think they're detrimental to the cause of Christ overall.
Yeah.
So there's, certain political agendas and things that people have, and they're banging the drum on it, and it's turning a lot of people off the institutionalized church and turning a lot of people off Christians. I don't know if it's turning a lot of people off Jesus, because people seem to have realised that there's actually a bit of a difference between Jesus and those who say they follow Jesus.
Yeah.
There seems to be a, you know.
Thank goodness for
thank
that.
Thank the Lord. Exactly. So for me, you know, the fruit of the spirit, as I was saying just a little minute ago there, that seems to be of critical importance right now, because that's what changes hearts and lives, you know, like the love, the joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control, like all well of that done. Stuff. Kids church, learn it. But, you know,
an
like that's...
Associate pastor in the room, hello. Pretend senior pastor.
Acting. those things they're attractive, you know, they are appealing and they are life-giving.
Yeah.
And to sit with someone in patience or to demonstrate that self-control of your own life and to be somebody who is joyful in the midst of trial or joyful when, you know, things are not going the way you expected them to go, but you have a deeper joy because your hope is not on this life. Your hope is actually on Christ, and your hope is on all that he is, you know, doing and will do in your life. And I think that to me that speaks, you know, volumes. If we could be people who honestly, sincerely reflect Jesus more, and are people who give life, and that's sort of our actions, that's our behavior, that's our activity. We're known, oh, those Christians, oh, they're so joyful, they're so loving, they're so kind, they're so patient, you know, they're so gentle. Like, that's not the language we often hear about Christians. In modern world. We hear Christians are judgmental. We hear about, like, Westboro Baptist Church that hold up scandalous signs, you know, which are just judgmental and harsh and ungodly. But we don't hear about the fruit of the Spirit. So I think for me, I think that's, if we could be developing, you know, sincere fruit in our lives, can you imagine how impactful that would be in our community, in our relationships, in those who know us, that we're, you know, people who are just, living that way.
Yeah.
So that's something that springs to mind. And the second, this is Matthew's gospel, this comes from, like, Matthew chapter 13, and Matthew 5 is the Sermon on the Mount, right? So we've got, you know, Jesus goes and does the whole blessed are, you know, and the Beatitudes, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, you know, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, you know, et cetera, et cetera, blessed are the merciful. So there's things that Jesus has already put in place in Matthew's gospel that give us points to be like, okay, what is it that, you know, what is Jesus sowing in us?
Yeah.
What is Jesus, you know, taking us and sowing us in the world that we should be like? What does wheat look like? Well, it looks like this. It looks like, you know, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Yeah.
And so I think if we as Christians and believers kind of tapped into that, the words of Jesus and the fruit of the Spirit, and, you know, maybe thought about others before we thought about ourselves, we might, you know, we might display some of that fruit, and that kind of might be, you know, a more effective evangelism strategy and, you know.
More effective than the Westboro Baptist.
More, a little bit.
Slightly.
Different signs.
Plot twist.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it?
Who would have known?
But I think what I like about that, Rox, and I think it's important, you said before that, you know, the fruits of the Spirit, like, they're the demonstration of a life devoted to Jesus. And, you know, when we first started this question, we were like, oh, you know, there's a list. And I think a list, if we just treat it as that, is all about, well, then what can I do? Okay, so how do I be kind?
Yeah,
how do I
task
focus? Yeah. And it's all on my shoulders to achieve that.
Yeah.
And we think, well, I need to tick everything off.
Yeah, I need to be giving more. I need to be serving more.
Right,
I need
to be,
keeping my whatever.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
But I think remembering that, you know, the fruits of the Spirit, the Beatitudes, like, they're all an outpouring of a life devoted to Jesus.
Yeah.
And really, like, if we want to be the wheat, if we want to bear fruit that leads to life, then it starts by, you know, being connected to the source of life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm the vine, and you are the branches. Like, so
you guys are throwing out Bible.
I know, it's true. Today. Thank you, we are.
I didn't go to Bible college, so I'm just,
just like, wow.
I'm going to say the answer to this question is Jesus.
Yes.
And that is what I'm saying, Jess. Yeah. Well
exactly
done.
Right. You got it.
Thank you. Because you are who you hang out with, right? So the more you spend time with Jesus, the more you look at him, and that's not how a lot of Christians act these days, is how Jesus would have acted. So looking to him as our kind of guide and reference.
Yeah. Well, just because we become task-driven, we become me-driven, you know, what are my goals? And, and you know, even the best intentions can be destructive, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's a bit harsh.
Another one, guys.
That's not scripture. Yeah. That's just pop culture.
You guys are just popping out quotes.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there are even moments, and I guess this, you know, this goes back to question one, and that where it can be deceitful
is that
there are times where it's like, well, I'm doing good things. You know, it might be ministry. It might be spiritual practices. It might be – and obviously God can use them regardless of our motivation. But our, if our motivation is self-driven,
About ourselves, and it's about a facade that we put up, or a mask that we wear for the wider world.
Whereas if it's Christ-driven, I just want to get to know Jesus. Yeah. I just want to be with Jesus. Oh, and look, by doing that, I'm just noticing that I'm being far more patient with people.
How funny. Who knew?
Who knew that that could be a byproduct? Being with Jesus and just focusing in on him more. Yeah. I think that's, you know, and he is the sower. He is the one who's going to harvest. Yeah. He is the one who bears the fruit. Yeah.
I think you pick that up too in your relationships. I remember someone asked me once, you know, who is the person that you can think of who's most like Christ to you? And surprisingly, it wasn't anybody that I, you know, like put on a platform. It wasn't like a particular pastor. It was somebody I knew that was really displayed the fruit of the Spirit, who was really caring and kind. Mm. And they didn't have a public persona. They just were a faithful Christian who was just in the Word, who was prayerful, had sort of really surrendered all the aspects of their life over to Jesus, and Jesus had done amazing work. And I remember that revelation and going, you know what, the people that look most like Jesus, you know, and the impact this person had on people's lives just by being like Jesus, I was like, what the heck?
Yep.
It's not necessarily about, you know, the upfronts or the, you know, like people like myself even, you know, put myself in there. Like it can be about that person that, you know, quietly is in the corner doing the work of God because they're soaking in the scriptures. They're, you know, living a life of obedience and surrender to God.
Yeah.
And the power in that is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that, like the purpose of the people of God is to obey and honor.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got – and I think, you know, and that's where we become, you know, a holy nation set apart.
Yeah, so that, there's another scripture.
You know.
Look
I
out.
Know, guys, I'm busting it out, you know.
In the beginning was the
word. Yes,
I've done it.
Nailed
it. Great.
Nailed it. And it was, Jess. You are
you're
correct.
Right.
But, you know, like – and yeah, and this ties into your whole point of it's not about us judging because if we are just faithfully obeying and honoring God in what we do in the life that we live, if that is our motivation, then the outpouring of that is the fruits of the Spirit.
Yeah, yeah. And it's
and that is
of
where
the
life
Spirit.
Is.
Yeah. The fruit, it's not the fruit of Roxanne, you know, or it's actually the fruit of the Spirit, that the Spirit is the one who does the work. And so I, you know, like my job is to obey and have my allegiance with the King and to invite God into all the aspects of my life and make that transformational. And then God's going to do the rest. He's going to do the magic growing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to kind of push that out, you know. It'll happen because God's in it.
Right on.
Nice.
Boom. Well, let's wrap up with question three.
So in this parable, we are the wheat, and part of that you were saying is about being patient and focusing on growing, but also knowing that we are living amongst weeds. And so how do we live within the tension of being patient with God and being proactive for the gospel?
Yeah, this is a tough one, isn't it? Because when you first read this parable, it's almost like it's saying to you something like, oh, don't worry about anything, just live. Mm. Don't worry about, you know, the world around you. And we know that's not what the gospel says. Yeah. You know, we're meant to
go make disciples,
et cetera, et cetera. And this isn't particularly talking about the gospel necessarily. It's talking about, you know, the kingdom, the lordship of Christ and the fact that he actually will come and there will be the great and glorious day of the Lord when, you know, all of human history will be wrapped up and God's going to be in charge and the kingdom's going to come and woohoo. So it's not necessarily talking about the gospel. But I was thinking about, and I didn't put this in the message, but in one of the things that Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes is we're actually called to be peacemakers. Like, so he says something like, blessed are the peacemakers. I'll look it up because I can't remember it. Oh, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, you know, it's not peacekeepers, right? We're not called to be peacekeepers, which is to keep the status quo.
To tame.
Yeah. Peacekeeping is about, like, keep it as it is, right?
Mm.
We're actually called to be proactive peacemakers.
Yeah.
And they're called the children of God, and we are the children of God in this parable. So, like, the there is an activity that we do as the church which is proactive, which isn't just let it be, let it go, let it lie, whatever. It's actually, no, there are tasks and jobs to do. So while this parable speaks to the human condition and the world, and which is why I mentioned it's the cosmos. The Greek word for world is cosmos, not like the stars and but, you know, the whole world. It's not about necessarily the church either. So sometimes people say, oh, this is parables about the church and the weeds of people infiltrating the church are really of the enemy and, you know, and, you know, there's
false teaching, all of that kind of stuff.
And it can be, like, the church is in the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, filled with humans.
Humanity who are flawed.
Hello. But it's not exclusively the church. Mm. But it's also not about preaching the gospel and going out of, you know, and sharing it. So it's more about, just the fact that Jesus is going to return and we need to have a big picture perspective of that.
Yeah.
So if you kind of look at all that, we do need to be proactive and we do need to, you know, share the gospel and we do need to do, you know, Matthew 28, the last thing he says in this very book, you know, go into the world and make disciples, you know, teaching them to obey all I've commanded, which is the end of the gospel. And that's a call, but how do we live with it? Matt, you've asked me a really tough question.
The congregation has.
Well, who was that for the 100?
Blame it on Slido.
But it is tricky. It is tricky because it's balancing the fact that we live in this flawed world and with manipulation and evil and people that you're like, what are your motives? I don't know what you're doing around. But at the same time, we want to offer out the words of life. We want to be people who display the fruits of the Spirit, who sort of, you know, live according to the Beatitudes in order that they might become wheat, that they might be in the planting of the Lord, to use that Old Testament language. And so, it is a fine balance.
Yeah.
Makes
me think about what you said in your message, like the kingdom of heaven is the now, not yet. Right?
Yeah,
like it was achieved, the inauguration occurred with the coming of Jesus, and yet we know that it won't be complete until Jesus' second coming. And I think what that, like, as you was talking, I just kind of had that light bulb moment of the now part of that equation means that we can and are invited to participate in the work of God, both within ourselves and within the world around us, to restore and renew all things, to renew our lives, to become new creations in Christ. That work can happen now, and that's achieved through the person of Jesus and what he did on the cross. But the not yet is the invitation to be patient.
Yeah.
We will not experience the complete work
and this side of eternity. We're not. Yeah.
So, you know, it's again, and I guess that's what the question, the answer to the question is how do we live in the tension?
We just do.
It's the now, not yet.
Antidepressants.
It's both. It's both. It is. We're called to be patient and we're called to be proactive.
Absolutely. Two good P words. Well done.
Well, yeah. I know you like your alliteration.
I do. But it's true. You know, we do live in this time where we wait, and which is why we said, you know, we pray the prayer, you know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's what we want to see happen. And it's the fine line.
Yeah.
And also it's about, I guess, centering centering Jesus in that as well. I think the difficulty being patient with God and being proactive for the gospel, we need to center the work of Jesus in our lives, like that. Jesus, what do you want me to do here? You know, like, are you, do you want me to be patient in this circumstance, in this situation, or am I going to step out and I'm going to say something here? What is it that you want? And I think I too often center myself instead of centering what Jesus wants. I kind of almost look at it through the lens of what do I think? But I think I need to be asking myself, what does Jesus want here? You know, how do I center him and make him the reality on which everything else spits?
Yeah. Absolutely. I love
craziness.
That.
Oh, right on. Big, it's a big one.
There you go.
It's a full on parable.
The kingdom of heaven is like a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Well, thanks so much, Rox. That was awesome. Aww. Great insights, great challenges.
Yay.
Aww. Just a whole bunch of things
to consider. A whole bunch of Bible in that, that man.
Was so much Bible.
I know.
You'd think we were Christians. A lot of Bible. Yeah. Well, we'll catch you next time, Rox.
See ya.
Oh, Jessica Baker.
Matthew Willis.
Tell me what, like, out of that huge conversation, and it was huge, what was your take home? Like, what's the thing that you're going to kind of chew on for this week?
Look, I haven't heard about the fruit of the Spirit in a long time.
It's been a hot minute.
I'm just like, what a time. I think when I was a youth leader, I talked about that, but it hasn't been up in the sermon. So, I haven't thought about it much. But I think that kind of conversation around... Yes, having those people close to you that are kind of watching and really gently guiding you, but also sitting with God and having that conversation of, look, what is there in my life that we need to kind of weed out?
Yeah.
Hopefully gently, but not always.
Not if I'm doing it.
And then kind of sitting in self-reflection of, actually, are there the fruits of the Spirit in my life?
Yeah.
And what am I producing? Is there toxic parts of my life? Yeah, I think I'm going to go home and reflect with my 5-week-old as I
bless
sit
her.
Watching
I'm sure
Netflix.
She's got great input.
She certainly lets it know when she's not happy with me, that's for
when
sure.
She's like, there is no fruit.
What about you?
I think that that need to allow people to come in with a bit of a magnifying glass and to take a bit of a closer look. Like,
it's scary.
It's scary. And I think, you know, we're quite fearful of, you know, the community knowing that we're not perfect, I think, within faith communities. And that's not a universal rule, but I know I've had times in my journey where it's just like, oh, man, everyone else is just smashing the Jesus goals and I'm over here like crippling self-doubt and struggling and you know, just struggling with it. But to have someone come in and to just actually go, no, I'm actually like, I believe that God has put certain people in my life for a reason, and that maybe part of that reason is to take a closer look and to go, hey, Matt, I love you. And let's just talk about this. Not because I want to smash you for it, not because I'm going to condemn you for it, but because I love you and I just want to chat with you. And are you aware of it? Like, has this been deceiving you into thinking that it was something else, or are you aware? And if so, how can I support you in that? How can I love you in that? Like, I need people in my life for that. And I, like, also I think there's an invitation, like, who can I be that person for? And I reckon that's just like, that's what the church is meant to be, like those conversations, you know, preferably over a cuppa, love a hot beverage.
Essential.
and just that beautiful grace and vulnerability, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my little.
Very nice.
Very nice. It was, it is, it shall
You've
be.
You've grown in such wisdom over the 100
Look
episodes.
Look at this. All those questions. That's 300 questions. Quick math.
Wow, that impressed me.
3 times 100.
Did you take into account the fourth question?
Okay, no, but
say like 296.
Gosh, you really just okay.
That's well, a lot of questions. It's a lot of answers.
It's been great to have you back, Jess. Like, thanks for that. All right, my friend. I will see you.
I mean, you may not
next week.
We'll just play it by ear.
We will. Everything's fine. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three, our 100th episode of deep dives into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.